Council President Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Jones?
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Wanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. I don't see Chris Bent. Okay. So if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item is consideration to amend the agenda.
I move we amend the agenda to include item 7D, request for Mayor Steer to confirm appointment of Antonio Conti, P.E., to the position of Cuyuna City Engineer.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to amend the agenda to add an item 7D under business for confirmation of City Engineer. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carry. Next item is the consent agenda. Is there any questions or?
Mayor, I just had two questions. I'm going to start this off with a fun one. Gordon, under the STAR construction, I know what these are, but can you just, for the record, explain what a mixed liquor pipe is?
It's actually the line that recirculates the biological growth and mixture in the sewer lagoons from the back of the treatment train to the front. And so it's called mixed liquor because it's got the biota mingled with it. And that's about all I can do.
Okay. I looked at that. I saw that. It just threw me off at first when I saw liquor. The other question I had regarding the alcohol license, I guess maybe Chris might answer this, is that a new license or is he transferring? I want to make sure we are offering him the same opportunity if it's a transfer as we did previously.
It is not a transfer.
Okay.
He had previously been leasing a different license. However, Idaho State Liquor said that he had to get his own.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I had, Mayor.
Okay. Anything further?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Wanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Consent agenda is approved as presented. Community reports, KPAL presentation, Cody Aldrich, Ada County Sheriff's Office. Cody, thank you. Good to see you.
Mayor, council members, great opportunity to be here. Thank you for this. And it's like coming home, even though it's in a new location, so it's kind of weird. But great to see you all and great for this opportunity. Just want to give you a quick update on Cuyuna Powell happenings and then introduce you to a few folks, and then we have a special presentation. Just as a quick update, so Cuyuna Powell's still growing, lots of great stuff going on, specifically in the soccer arena. We were told at one time that when the soccer program left Cuyuna, it was a big hit to the city and the youth sports, and so one of the pushes has been to grow the soccer program and bring that back, and we appreciate Bobby's team and the help with the city with the Arbor Ridge Park. We held our first season there in the fall, and what I mean by first season wasn't the first season that Cuyuna's had soccer, but it was the first season where we hosted all the games and all the participants were Cuyuna. So before we had a few teams, but we played in the Nampa League just like we did in football. We started out, but we played in Meridian. So right now this spring you'll have Cuyuna will have its full soccer league in play, all Cuyuna kids, and then all the games will be played here in Cuyuna, and then the same thing with football. And so as part of that, just with the growth of the program, we've grown the board, we've grown different positions. I'm currently serving as the secretary of Cuyuna Powell, and so for the president, you have Todd Moyer. He's back there next to John McDaniel. So So Todd Moyer is an accident reconstruction specialist for the Sheriff's Office. He is a longtime volunteer for PAL. He was there in the beginning, and so we appreciate him. He serving as the CUNAPAL Vice President, or CUNAPAL President. CUNAPAL Vice President is John McDaniel. He was selected as the Vice President. We like to have those ties to current law enforcement officers in their role. We have Chelsea Campbell. She's the treasurer. So Chelsea is a juvenile probation officer here in CUNA, and she refers a lot of the kids that we scholarship, as you know, from prior presentations. That's one special thing about CUNAPAL is we do not turn a kid away, regardless of financial status. And so we will find a way to help them be able to play and participate. And Chelsea, in her role, she gets an opportunity to meet with kids that might have specific needs, and so she's able to work through that and give them an opportunity to participate. And then you have Brittany Schaffner. So Brittany is the director of soccer. She is the CUNA soccer program. She's grown the program herself, put in numerous hours. She's invaluable. Her husband, Jason Schaffner, built our website. He's been the one that's put together a lot of the security protocol for CUNAPAL. He's a Boise City police officer. And so it's just a great, great program that's really giving back to the youth in the community. And the folks here, you know, not only live in the CUNA area, they give back to the community. So major kudos to them. And then that's part of the presentation. So as you know, Chief Dussault has served as the vice president up until the recent elections for many years on the CUNAPAL board. He's helped guide CUNAPAL's directions. He supported us and has participated in paperwork to presentations and different things. And so to thank him for that, we didn't want to get him flowers or anything like that. So we figured that a $50 gift card to Cabela's would be just fine. No, he's done a great job, and again, it's pretty exciting to see the future of CUNA sports, and not just the sports, but the youth opportunities. So I'd like to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Okay, questions for Cody.
How many kids do you have doing soccer and football?
So we just opened up soccer as a year-round, so we've opened that back up. How many do we have in turn? Do you remember?
Cool.
Yeah, and we last year I think we were about 165 in football, and we should have for football for the Pee Wee division. I think we had four teams, and then eight teams in the sophomore and eight teams in the junior. So
nice.
It's really grown. We've really tried to refocus with the current culture of youth sports and the competitiveness of it. We've really tried to refocus those younger ages with skill building and just that positive interaction. So we got rid of the tournaments and some of those types of things. And then for the older ones that want to be a little bit more competitive and see the value of hard work and putting in the practice, we try to make the tournaments a little bit more rewarding. We give out trophies, to first place and do different things like that. But ultimately, it is an activities league, so we're wanting to continue that leadership aspect of it and some of the other opportunities. But all in all, going well financially. We're there. We appreciate the support of many members of the community. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so anybody prepping for tax time next year, let me know. I'll get you set up. But any other questions I can answer?
I just appreciate what you guys do. Really do.
So I appreciate the city's support, and specifically Bobby's team, and they've done a great job. It's been very helpful. Good partnership.
Well, thank you, and thank you all. I know there's a great deal of work and effort that goes into that, but it's just such a great resource for our city and our youth, and just the things that they learn from those types of exercises is a huge benefit for us. So all of your time that you spend is well worth it, and we thank you very much.
Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you, Cody.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you don't know what to do with that Cabela's gift card, I can help you out.
I think Cabela's closed down, didn't they?
The next item on the agenda is public hearing and consideration to approve 15-05-S subdivision. Troy Bunit is the senior planner. Do we want the applicants to come up and speak first?
Mayor, council members, my name is David Crawford. I'm with B&A Engineers. I'm here representing the landowner, developer of Silver Trail Subdivision. What we bring forth to you here tonight is a development in the city of Cuna, which is south and east of the existing Danskin development. It also exists east of the existing Silver Trail development, which these two sites will abut, so this one we're calling it the Silver Trail Addition Lands. This land is basically an infill project from a larger development that occurred many years ago. That part was part of the Danskin overall development. And subsequently, since the purchase of this land, the LID assessments have been paid off. 10 acres of a school property was gifted to the school district as part of that original development agreement, and those development agreement provisions have all been satisfied. Part of the lands that constituted the original master plan were also sold to the school district, so now there's a 40-acre parcel of ground that the school district owns near the southeast corner of Columbia and 10 Mile Road. So what we have before you tonight is representative of much information that we received through the Planning and Zoning Commission. We've had two hearings with the Planning and Zoning Commission. One of them was due to an error in posting, but through that we were able to glean some information. And this, what you see here before you tonight, is a representation of the information that we received from the neighbors and the Planning and Zoning Commission. We consolidated the open space as much as we could to be near the southeast corner of the development at the extension of Mason Creek and School Street. We've got about 12 acres of open space that's all been landscaped throughout the development, and we also granted an additional few acres, or about an acre and a half, I believe, located about in the middle of the development here. So we did that based on information that we received from both the neighbors and the Planning and Zoning Commission. And we also had to accommodate for much ACHD input from the original conditions. So ACHD added a roundabout to the intersection of Mason Creek and School Street, which we've accommodated for on this plan. That required us to revamp a lot of the southwest corner of the development. We also have a mid-mile collector of School Street that runs through the project. There was some input from the Planning and Zoning Commission questioning the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit that road is designated to have, and it is because it is a mid-mile collector. We placed, in accordance with Cuna City Code, we placed buffer strips along the entire corridor, except for that small section where we only have 50 feet, which we can only place the road in. There's not enough room for the landscaping to go in there. So we did a substantial amount of redesign through that, and we received unanimous approval twice from the Planning and Zoning Commission. So what you see here today is one that we believe has been well thought out. It's in compliance with Cuna City Code. Each lot will be eligible for pressurized irrigation, water, domestic water, and sanitary sewer through the City of Cuna services that are available to the project. So with that, I'd like to stand for any questions you may have and request approval for our development this evening.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
It looks like you added two other smaller open spaces on that kind of there's like a triangle one. I can't really. That one there, yeah, then the one kind of above to the right a little bit. Is that an open space too? I saw the big one. I mean, I can't tell what that other one is. Is that open space also? Or
council member, mayor. We have two opens, we have two different kinds of open space there. One is going to be owned by the Homeowners Association, which is south of Mason Creek, which is this triangular piece.
Okay.
This lot right here is going to be maintained by the Homeowners Association, but there's an existing turnaround from the Danskin development for fire department access. So we propose to continue that fire department access temporary turnaround, but it won't be providing public street connection through to the private lanes in Danskin. So it's kind of a, it's just going to be landscaped and maintained by the Homeowners Association. But as if something happens in the future, that could become eligible for a building permit.
And are you guys providing any amenities to these open spaces, or is it just going to be grass?
So we've provided buffers along the entire parkway system. There are 12 acres of parkland in there. We buffered the entire green space from the streets with density of planting of trees and shrubs and that. But what we've afforded is an opportunity for the, because those aren't public open spaces, we've afforded an opportunity to the Homeowners Association to place the amenities that they wish to have in there that they want to own, operate, and maintain.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. This is a public hearing. I have the sign-up sheet here with one person to testify in opposition. Was there anyone else that wished to testify that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay. Troy, did you want to present before we move on to that? Okay. Okay. Troy, go ahead.
Chris also has a PDF. If you would please put that up on the big screen, Chris, that would be great. Thank you. Staff appreciates the opportunity to work with David Crawford and also with Tim Eck on this project. It's been a long time coming. In fact, you'll notice that it actually has a 1505 at the beginning of the project number. We've been working on it a very long time, and it got delayed because of a traffic impact study that was required that they had to go back and remodify and have that submitted. It took a long time for that to take place. The application before you tonight, 1505-S, is a preliminary plat for Silver Trail Addition subdivision. It's located between 10 Mile and Linder, just south of Columbia Road. And it is currently zoned R6. It's in the city of CUNA, and it is consistent with the project that's being proposed, or the project is consistent with the zoning that's already in place. The noticing procedures actually didn't go the way they were supposed to during the December 2016 meeting, and so we held another one at the end of January. That's the meeting that David was talking about. In between those two meetings, the applicant was responsive to some of the changes that the neighbors had requested, including some open space and some additional things that that will make this an even better project. And so the packet that you have read was the original packet that was presented, and then the three pieces of paper that you received tonight and the item that's on the television screen right now, that actually reflects the changes to and their responsiveness to those Planning and Zoning Commission questions and concerns. Other than that, staff would stand for any questions that you might have. I would also note that the Planning and Zoning Commission did vote unanimously both times to approve this, and staff really is just wants to note that this is a technical compliance issue, our project, and that's what the applicant has done. They are technically compliant with all the city codes that are in place at this time.
I have just one question.
Sure.
Out of curiosity, do you happen to know, I noticed in the packet, stand by. This is in the neighborhood meeting. It's page 16 of 101. There's a question about what are the home sizes, and it says they may range from 1,400 to 2,800 square feet depending on market conditions and what homeowners want and stuff. But then I noticed in the estimate of revenue generation, it listed that the client estimated square footage of homes to range between 2,000 and 2,200 square feet. Do you know which one of those is?
I would defer to the applicant to answer that. Just by way of information, because this is a straight zoning package and we're looking for technical compliance, that's not really anything that staff gets in the middle of. If they are compliant with all of the conditions and zoning requirements and measurements for the lots and streets and widths, then yeah, we don't really get into that, but I'm sure the applicant can address that.
Okay.
Yep.
Troy, is there anything, there's nothing along that creek, is there, that allows public access? I'm concerned about safety of having a creek so close to homes, and so I didn't know if there's any access or is it fenced off or...
I don't believe, well, I'll let the applicant answer that. Okay. I believe it's not a sizable creek, but I'll let them discuss that.
Yeah, just with little kids, I was just concerned about drownings. So that was.
I guess one thing, I can wait for him to answer that, but I do have a question regarding our code. I can't find in here where the estimated cost of bringing the services to the subdivision, as far as what it's going to cost for the schools and police and fire and all that. I saw the revenue, but are they not supposed to supply a cost of services?
I do not believe that that's part of our requirement.
Is that a large-scale subdivision?
I'm sorry?
Is that a large-scale subdivision?
It is a large-scale subdivision, yes.
If I'll let y'all, I'll defer my answer if you want to, when you get a chance. Will you go look at the 65-4, item number B, that says estimate the public service costs to provide adequate service to the development?
I don't believe that that talks about numbers. I think that just says, are they providing the service?
Well, I guess I'm confused, and maybe Richard may have to chime in here. Because under that same code, item D is requiring that suggested public means of financing the services for the development if the cost for the public services would not be offset by tax revenue received from the developer. So the way I'm reading this is they're supposed to provide the cost for all these services, the revenue generated, and then if there's any discrepancy that is the revenue is less than the expenses, that they're supposed to provide means of how that revenue is going to be generated. Am I reading that wrong, Richard?
Councilmember Jones, I believe that is the question in that code section is what the city is expending to bring those services. In this case, the developer is expending those funds to bring the services to that site.
So they're expending the funds for the fire protection, police protection, maintenance, or schools. I guess those would be the three that I'd be more concerned about. The other ones, it looks like they... obviously, they're paying for the roads and all that, but
the roads and the city services are the developer. The others are going to be paid for by taxes
but
generated.
Sorry,
the taxes generated from the properties.
But if we don't have an estimate of what it costs to provide those services to the subdivision, how do we know that the tax revenue is going to cover those expenses?
Well, we figure that out when we work with the police services. During the contract times.
And then what happens if then exceeds that time and then we can't go back to the developer if those costs exceed what they're
their revenue is supposedly generating.
I'm not sure we get that specific when we calculate that. We just do it as, you know, we annex in and we charge our city taxes that cover those services.
Which code are you referencing?
I'm referencing 65-4.
Thank you.
I guess I'm curious of why that code is in there then.
You'll give us a second, or if we can.
Sure. I mean, we can. You can defer. Yeah, you can come back. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Oh, that's fine.
Okay, well, while they're doing that, Troy, would you set that panel down so everybody else can see the, thank you. So we'll come back to that. Is it all right if we go ahead and open up the public hearing part and we can get through that?
Did council have any more questions?
Any other questions for Troy?
No.
Richard,
if
go ahead.
I could have the floor, Mayor.
Yes.
Tim, I was kind of curious, on Pear Apple Drive, you've cut it down to 29 feet in width. Has the fire department had any objection to that?
Councilmember Cardoza, Mayor, again, David Crawford with BNA Engineers. The fire department hasn't specifically weighed in on that yet, but it is quite typical. It is a quite typical cross-section, road cross-section, to use a 29 back-to-back 42-foot right-of-way. And what normally occurs as a requirement is to have parking restricted one side, so it'll only have one lane of parking. It is reduced about 7 feet from a normal road cross-section, which is 36 feet back-to-back curve, which allows parking on both sides.
I believe you've got homes on both sides of that road. How are you going to obstruct one side from parking?
It'll be signed. So we'll have no parking signs out there. It's quite common.
Okay.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much. So just so to note, after the public hearing part here, we will come back to give staff a chance to answer that last question. But we'll go ahead and open this up to the public hearing portion. I have Bryce Durant has signed up to testify. Bryce, if you would come to the podium and state your name and address for the record, please.
Bryce Durant. 2345 West Columbia Road. I appreciate the opportunity to address City Council today. As you, many of you know, I was born and raised here in Kuna. Grew up here. Was always proud to call Kuna my home. Reading through the comprehensive plan, one of the main things that keeps coming up is the desire to keep the city of Kuna with a small town feel. I feel more and more as we allow these developments to go in that we are losing that small town feel. Most of the developments are like this. They average in that 7,000 to 8,000 square foot lot size, and they're pretty cookie cutter to me. I mean, the city, the comprehensive plan calls for a variety of lot sizes. I look at this preliminary plan and say, where's the variety? I mean, probably 80% of those lots fall in that 5,000 to 7,000 square foot size. Kuna has loads of those lot sizes. Where are our bigger lots? As you know, the bigger lots provide for more income for the city through taxes to provide for the necessary things like our schooling, our fire protection, police protection. this is not providing that. Another thing I would like to, in the comprehensive plan of the land use section, section 6, says provide a variety of housing densities and types to accommodate various life sizes, ages, and economic groups. And encourage a balance of land uses to ensure that Kuna remains a desirable, stable, and self-sufficient community. Are we really self-sufficient? How many times has the school district came to us in the last 10 years to ask for new bonds to pay for new schools? The new houses that are being built are not providing those funds to be self-sufficient in our schools. We have to keep going back to community members asking for more money to build schools for these new houses. Being a longtime Kuna resident, how many times am I going to have to pay for new schools to be built when the new houses aren't providing their own way? Goal 3 of that section, protect the quality of existing residential neighborhoods and ensure new residential development is sustainable. And the policies protect the quality of existing neighborhoods to ensure their character and quality is preserved. This is where I feel this plan does not meet the comprehensive plan that is provided. The Danskin lots are all larger lots, 1 acre lots. One of those corner lots has 7 houses backed up to it. Is that really preserving what those people bought when they bought that house, to have 7 houses in their backyard? To me, that is not preserving the quality of the existing residential neighborhoods. My house falls on there, and I will have up to 4 houses in my backyard on my 1 acre lot. When I bought the house, that isn't what I was envisioning. I was envisioning that I knew it would be developed, but I was envisioning the larger 1 acre lot. Also, my lot backs up to School Street, and how is this going to end with their buffer strip just all of a sudden ending there? I'm out of time, but thank you for listening.
Did you have anything else you want to say? We don't have a lot of people signed up, so I'll give you an extra minute or so if you want.
Just how they provide that 20-foot buffer strip, and then all of a sudden it ends. Well, is there going to be sidewalks? What about landscaping or anything? I mean, if you're familiar with School Street on Deer Flat, you've got one side that's landscaped and the other side that's just kind of barren. And is that really providing a good view to the city? In my opinion, it's not.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, was there anyone else who wished to testify that we didn't get signed up? Okay, if not, if we could have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Are you guys ready for any response to the question? You've only got 2 of those. Do you want mine too, so you can have 3?
Sometimes paper's a little easier when you have to reference back and forth. Good evening. For the record, Richard Rhodes, Council Member Jones asked about 654. I think Council Member Jones, if you look at 651, the purpose of that chapter, the developments that pose a special concern to the Planning and Zoning Commission and elected officials when reviewing and acting upon the subdivision request, that preface leads into the 654 that outlines those items that you referenced for the large-scale development, identification of the services. That would be on page, I believe it's something's in the way of it. It looks like it's 24 of 101. The services, it then has the tax revenue, and then basically what you're looking at is if there's an estimated public service cost to provide those services to the development. I would suggest that those services there that are listed or self-financed by the tax revenue generated. I don't know if we want to get into, and Planning and Zoning didn't have a question about, are those services that are going to be required by that subdivision going to exceed that generated tax Admiral, I don't know if you have a question looking at those numbers, if you believe that's the case, but if it is, we should probably go back at tax time and reevaluate our equity for the taxes on the generation to provide those services. If you build a rooftop, supposedly that tax generated by that is enough to cover those services being provided. It may be behind for a year when they do that, but overall speaking, I would suggest that the tax revenue does cover those services provided.
I guess I'm just concerned. I mean, the biggest thing I'm concerned about, Richard, is that our code says that, and you know, my job is to, I can't vote on something outside of the code. I don't want to be accused of not following our code. I'm not necessarily concerned about the numbers. I am a little bit, because that explanation means that there should never be a bond. If the, for anything, fire, police, schools, if they're covering those costs, then why do we need more money? So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I mean, I'm just, you're telling me that it's supposed to be there by this. I'm not saying I'm not against removing it out of the code, if that so chooses, but if it wasn't the council, I don't believe at any time put that in the code, because typically the city comes to council to add stuff to our code and not vice versa. So I just want to make sure that the way that this, we're coming up with some of these things that we're running short on money, are we really collecting enough money to cover these services? And or do I have that right at budget time to say that I can go back and look at all these costs and tell whatever entity that that's the only money you're getting, because that's what this says here, and you can't have any more because we haven't collected any more, or we haven't estimated any more additional revenue? I mean, I just hope you understand, and maybe understand that the interpretation that I'm coming across by reading it. I mean, can you see where I'm questioning it? I mean, I'm not necessarily trying to kibosh anything, but I mean,
yeah. I guess I would have to say that I think the way that the system is set up is not to. I mean, generally, any entity has to run bonds to buy new buildings, and those are ongoing costs. When the state provides funding for school districts, they provide operational costs. They don't provide money for infrastructure. That's for the public to do, and that's something that's going to be ongoing whether you grow or not. You may not need to build a new school, but you're going to have to keep upgrading the school. And same with fire districts, they have the same issues, but I think that's just by virtue of the way that system is set up. Perhaps we could look at that code and see if there's something we need to clarify within that to take out any confusion.
I'm just looking at, and these developments go out to the different entities. So fire would have received the application, and there's no comment that they're going to be fiscally impacted, but they would need to council to ask for the developer to pay funds up front for the development. Police protection, that's all part of the contract. They based those numbers on the prior year. That would be difficult to say this rooftop has to provide X amount in addition to what they're going to pay in their taxes. Water, sewer, road construction, those are impact fees, and then connecting to the city utility services, parks, and open space. We have a park impact fee that takes care of that now. Recreation included in that, maintenance, which is separated by a comma, so I'm not sure if the schools had an opportunity to comment, and I don't believe that they commented on this application specifically to say that they needed extra money. They're coming forward with their bond that supposedly with this development will help pay for that. And then finally, the solid waste collection, which is a trash service, picks up the accounts, and they expand as they get new customers. So as I break down those identification of those services, services. I know where you're going, but I'm having a trouble finding out exactly where there would need to be revenue in addition to what's generated by the taxes for those new rooftops.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I mean, that's not necessarily what my point is. Okay. My point is that I'm to vote on this, and if they follow our code, then I have no resource or recourse to vote any other way, which I'm not saying that's what I'm going to do. But our code is saying that they are to provide that. It is not provided. So now, I mean, obviously we can make a motion to waive that requirement, but are you not telling me, am I reading that wrong? And is that code saying that that is not required for a large-scale subdivision?
So let's go through this then. So the services have been identified.
Correct.
Okay. Is it B, estimate the public service cost to provide adequate services to the developer?
B is the only one because B also goes into D. So if you have B and C, then you can figure out if D applies. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, if we were to move this, I don't have a problem with that either. I want to make sure I'm following code when I vote on something, so I cannot be accused of not. And that's all my only clarity is just a legality point. It's not the numbers. I mean, granted, it would be nice to see. I mean, I don't think that they're off. I mean, I don't really think that this subdivision compared to the revenue that's coming in. I mean, I would prefer to have those revenue numbers a little closer to actual. They're a little old, but I can deal with that. But I just want to make sure that legally, that if something is not provided to me in code, that if I were to vote for it without, and I don't know if I can waive that requirement. I guess we have that power to do, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. But if we have to waive it, I just want to make sure we put that in the code that we are waiving that requirement or in the motion. So
let me answer it this way, and then I would argue that the estimate of the public services is on that page that indicates the revenue generated. Those entities have determined what it costs to operate per household in CUNA, and that then is the anticipated cost for those providing those services.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I just
if you ask a developer, tell me how much this impact is. The developer is going to figure out if that impact is going to equal or come close to what those taxes or those revenue fees are generating. I mean, how else would you do it? You may have 10 houses that never call law enforcement and one that does, but each house of those 11 is going to pay the same amount based upon that pro rata share into the city's tax revenue.
I understand where you're coming from. I mean, I guess the only way you could do it is if these entities provided the cost per house. I mean, what does it cost the police department to police another house? What does it cost them to police 10 houses? And I guess, you know, that might be asking too much. And I'm not saying to do that. I just want to make sure that if this code applies and it's not followed, either we waive that requirement or we – and that's all I'm looking for. I just want the legality point of it.
I would submit that that page that was provided by the developer satisfies the code.
Okay. Yes.
Because the taxes generated equal the cost to provide those services.
Okay. So I'll take that as an answer to my long story.
I suggest that this may have illustrated a need to review this 40-year-old section of code to see if it's still useful?
Sure. I mean, we can only do that. So.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We had one testimony in opposition. Did anyone else? Would you like the applicant has an opportunity to come up and rebut? Sorry, we got kind of out of order here. Hope that doesn't mess you up any.
Mayor, council members, my name is Tim Eck. I live at 6152 West Half Moon Lane in Eagle. I am the applicant. I just wanted to reiterate the history on this project. It does go back about 10 or 12 years. The Damskin, the Greater Damskin Master Plan was 300 acres, I think, at one time. You have to take into consideration the fact that 40 acres of that was then sold to the school district, is now a school site. 10 acres was given to the school district, is now the Silver Trail School. Part of the diversity and the density that's being required is the Dansky and Ridge development, which are all one-acre lots. And then you go into Applewood, and Applewood has larger lots. Now we're getting to the tail end of the subdivision where we have to start bringing in the smaller lots. The original Dansky had much smaller lots than this. It had stuff that was probably, you know, six to eight lots an acre. We haven't done that. We've maintained larger lots. I think our density is 3.54 out here per acre. Overall, the property was assessed through the LID more EDUs than we're going to use. We had to pay off the entire LID assessment, including the park, or including both school sites. A small percentage of the EDUs associated with those school sites were retained for the school sites, but all the rest of them we ended up paying for, and you know, we're able to move them to other properties in the city that were not covered by the LID. But this plat has less lots, significantly less lots, than originally intended by the previously approved Dansky master plan. And that, of course, that was done, that master plan was prior to annexation, prior to the LID, and all fell under the direction of a very specific development agreement. That development agreement was vacated a couple years ago because all of the conditions of the development agreement had been met. The city had met their requirements, and the landholders had met their requirements, which included, I think, paying off 200 LIDs, and I think we paid off about 700 EDUs. There is a diversity of density and lot size and house sizes out there, but you have to take into consideration everything that's already built that was part of the greater, the Dansky master plan. My engineer has some more information to give to you about the lot size questions, but I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Okay. Any further questions for Tim?
Tim, I appreciate you guys coming back and adding the open spaces. Absolutely. I know that was a real big concern, and I do appreciate that, so absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor, council members, David Crawford, B&A Engineers again. I appreciate Tim going through all that. He covered a lot of the things I wanted to touch base on. But just to follow up on the creek crossing question or the Mason Creek drain that runs through the property, the Kuna City Code does require that each phase boundary of the development is fenced. So along the boundary of the development will be fenced. Where it won't be fenced is where it crosses, where the roadway crosses. Those are required for access. We're not allowed to basically touch the corridor for the drain and interfere with the Bureau of Reclamation or the Kuna Irrigation District's maintenance responsibilities for that. So what we do is we do place the fences in accordance with the code there. I think that was the only one. Yeah, that was it.
Can you tell me about the discrepancy in the size of the houses? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah, the size of the homes.
Yeah.
Well, we look at those things in two different veins. So we understand that there could be, that this, what we're looking at here is driven by the market and what we, and a successful marketing model for homes being sold in the area. It's been working well, so we like to continue it, but it allows for a mix of people to come in and buy a home that they want so they can have a range of sizes. The revenue generation report looks like it at it from an average of what's been built in other developments like it. So they're seeing things on the higher, the middle of the road, to 2,000 to 2,200 square foot size. So that's why they looked at it from a revenue generation of what's based on an average-ish place, is my understanding of it. So that's why you're seeing a discrepancy.
Okay, but the plan is still to have the variety between 1,400 and 2,800, depending on what the needs and wants are and that sort of thing?
Correct. And okay. And we typically don't see very many homes at 1,400 square foot, but it's really dependent on what people want to buy, come in and purchase and have a place that they can raise their family.
Very good. Anything else?
Just one follow-up question on that creek. Is there a path that runs along it?
There's a council member Jones, Mayor. Yeah, there is a gravel access or a access point for the irrigation ditch.
But no encouragement to ride bikes, or you're not paving anything along.
It's not like a green belt.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, an access road to go through there, and that's fine. I just want to make sure we weren't putting pavement, green belt type thing that encourages people to be walking along that creek or anything. And you're not doing that. Yeah, you can't stop
it. Mayor, no, we're certainly not doing that. Okay. In many instances, we'd love to do it. In many instances, it becomes quite an attractive thing, a part of the community. We're totally restricted by the Bureau of Reclamation, so we can't interfere with their maintenance. So we can place gravel down in sections if we were, but you know, if we're encouraging or not encouraging it, we really haven't gone that far. But to many communities, we've had the opportunity here locally in some of the older developments in Arbor Ridge to be able to place a paved pathway within the corridor of the Hubbard Beal Drain, and it's quite an amenity for the neighborhood. So I wouldn't throw it all the way off due to safety concerns, but there is some safety measures that we're taking that we can implement now that would allow for the fencing to be placed along there, and then we're at the behest of the Boise Project Board of Control to basically leave their stuff alone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Anything further? If nothing else, the question is rightfully before council. Oh, Troy.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones, that's a great question. Actually, on page 2 of the staff report, at the bottom, it talks about a recreation pathways map. Within the staff memo, there actually is an illustration where it does talk about a future trail through part of this subdivision in this area.
But that's not being put in right now. So if anything, that's going to be possibly a city entity, not a subdivision or not a developer entity.
Well, the future pathways map does call for it. So this body could add that to the conditions.
As far as venting it, or?
Or with providing some kind of access, as long as it's not interfering with the district.
Yeah, I'd probably rather just do that as a whole thing and not just per development. So, I mean, as long as they're not putting anything right now, we can, I would be comfortable dealing with that at a later time. I mean, I would just, so I know that water isn't the greatest either, so that's the runoff. So.
Okay, thank you, Troy. Council.
Okay, I'll start.
Okay.
For the gentleman who spoke, I personally totally agree on, I'd like to see some bigger lots, because I think that's one thing that we're missing within city limits. But at this point, our comp plan doesn't allow us, as I read it, the flexibility to deny based on just that interest. Later on the agenda, we're talking about we're going to retain a company to help us redo it a little bit, and I'm hoping we can build some of that flexibility in. So we can maybe encourage a greater variety. But as the comp plan's written right now, I do think, as Troy mentioned, this is an application that comports with all of the requirements of both the comp plan and city code. It does have, well, it currently conforms to the land use map, the future land use map, in terms of density. I am heartened somewhat by the fact that there's a plan to allow a variety of sizes of housing, and that definitely also follows our comp plan, which calls for us to have a mix of residential type dwellings and different families that we can accommodate. There's some variety with regard to the lot size. it does, I think, add to our network of roadways and sidewalks and that sort of thing. Yeah, overall, I mean, the fact that they added the open spaces is great, and I think also speaks to some of the elements of our comp plan, which ask folks to incorporate landscape features and uses of that nature. So overall, I think it, my read is that it comports with code and with the comp plan. So I would, I guess, go ahead and make a motion to approve. Hang on,
sure.
I'm navigating. So I
1505-S.
Thank you. Motion to approve 15-05-S.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 15-05-S subdivision. Is there further discussion? And we want to add the conditions of approval.
Mayor, before
presented by staff.
Before you proceed, I've got a question. Wendy, the development agreement was rescinded back in 2006, I believe. Because this is a preliminary, would there be a new development agreement at this time?
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, sorry, I'll amend my motion. I was at the wrong part of the packet. So I move we approve 15-05-S with the conditions of approval as listed in the packet.
I will second again.
Second still stands. Is there any further discussion?
I guess I'm not sure if Pat wants to wait until there's discussion on the issue or...
Regarding...
It is.
Regarding the my issue with the
yes
the financing part
yes
no I will defer to
okay.
Our attorney stating that they fulfilled that. I'm good with that. Thank
okay.
you. I appreciate you.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Further discussion. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. Item 7A, consideration to approve CUNA splash pad location. Bobby Withrow, Parks Director.
Mayor and Council, as you know, I've been working on the splash pad. Where we want to put it. Started back a couple months ago, asking, you know, the public where we want to put it. We put it out to multiple parks, and we went ahead and put the top three in my little slideshow up here of where people did it. And with that, we did a survey on the website. Kind of seeing how many people are going to use it, and then also having people vote on it to where they want to see it. So we'll kind of start with that. Okay. The next slide is actually going to be a pretty good picture of what it's going to look like when it's all finished. You'll see that there's a spot for little kids, and then there's a spot for bigger kids, and then kids in the middle. So it's going to accommodate everybody that we have in the city. Next. So some of the statistics, we asked, do you plan on using the splash pad? 90% said yes. How many children do you have? 71% of the people said they had two or more. So that was kind of cool to know. And then the age ranges. As you can see, 2 to 5 year old, 42%, 5 to 8, 38%, 8 and older, 54%, and under 2, 22%. So once again, there's a big age difference with everything. So there's a good variety of people that are going to be using this. some other things. How often do you plan on using the splash pad? Most people said at least once a week to several times a week. And then here's the big one is what park would you like to see the splash pad? We did have issues with this one because we did have people go on and bolt multiple times. And we were able to trace those back with the routers. So we did kind of eliminate the ones that voted nine times in a row. and we came out with 80 votes for each of these sites. So Bernie Fisher Park on the Greenbelt and then the Barn Park on Deer Flat and Linder. So now I'm going to go through some pros and cons with each site. For Bernie Fisher, it's downtown, centrally located. There is parking. There is water that's easily accessible. It does have existing restrooms, existing shelters, and it does have fencing around most of it this time. And it's easily visible to the public. So somebody driving by can easily look over and say, hey, I'm going to take my kid to the splash pad. And then on this picture, A and B, those are just kind of general sizes of the splash pad. I have kind of the locations in a later slide. So the next part, the cons. I'm going too fast. So there'd be potential conflict with Kuna Days and the farmer's market. And then we may need to move a couple trees depending on where we want to put it, or we may need to relocate a couple of the amenities. They're really not that bad. The farm park, the pros, there's plenty of space. It's already got a small paved parking lot. There have been trees that have been recently planted that could be used to shade, and it's also easily visible to the public. The cons, it is by one of our busiest intersections, so noise and safety are a concern. And then it would add traffic to the neighborhood. And we definitely need to expand that parking lot if we were going to put it here. There are no shelters. There are no restrooms. And it would, we were afraid it was going to add noise to the assisted living center. And that area is actually designated as a storm drainage area for the existing subdivision right there. So the Greenbelt. Some of the pros with that is it's downtown, centrally located. You can park at either Bernie Fisher or by Indian Creek. There are existing restrooms. And then we have trees for shade, places to wait. So floaters waiting to go or volleyball, disc golf. And kids can go play there during baseball games. Kind of the cons with that. We would need to move one of the disc golf tee pads. We'd probably need to add a net for safety concerns from the baseball field for home run balls when games are going on. We would need to add pathways to make this ADA compliant. And then we might need to remove a couple trees. There are no shelters nearby. The closest ones are up in Bernie Fisher Park. And then the water line is up on 2nd Street, so we'd have to tear up the road to get water down there. So in conclusion, after looking at all the feedback we got from online surveys and our budget considerations, I concluded that the most economical place was in Bernie Fisher Park. That way, if we do it there, we can put more money into the actual splash pad and not worry about what else we have to do to make it so people can use it. So are there any questions or comments so far?
Questions? Okay.
All right, so the next slide, I put some kind of areas together where I think we can make it fit and make it work. So the placement on pad A, We can move the gazebo east of the basketball court, just north of the swing set, and put it over there. Only problem with that is trees in the fall. All the leaves will drop in the splash pad. It'll be kind of a pain to clean it up. And then for pad A, it is closer to the road, and we would need part of the basketball court taken out and converted into the splash pad. Pad C, we need to relocate the children's wings and the bouncy toy with the four animals. And then D, we would need to remove a tree or two, and that also might get in the way of other activities that could go on. During events, or if people want to rent it out for soccer camps or something. So those are kind of the options that I've kind of put together. There's pros and cons with all of them. So I'm just looking for some feedback on where we need to start planning to go next.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Bobby? Comments?
I'll go first. If money weren't an option, do you think the farm location, I guess, is suited to this use? Or because it's a floodplain or whatever, the runoff thing, and just generally its location, it just doesn't seem ideal?
If it wasn't for the floodplain and the drainage, I think it would be a good spot, because we could always put a fence up around the park to keep kind of kids contained. But because we have that issue of it being a drainage area, that's why we wanted to get away from it.
Okay. I was just thinking, my first thought was, you know, we've been talking about wanting to put bathrooms in different parks around the city and stuff, and so I was like, well, maybe we just, you know, splurge and decide that we're going to go ahead and do bathrooms and shelter and stuff like that, because that seems like otherwise a good location, but if you think it just logistically wouldn't really work out, then that's all I need to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mayor, Bobby, I appreciate all the effort that you and whoever's helped you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I don't have a problem with the farm. I don't have a problem with Bernie Fisher Park. I'm going to defer that to you. I don't know if I've ever seen any water in the farm park, but I do caution you, too, about throwing away votes, 9 people vote in a row, because maybe that person was at work and had 9 CUNA residents vote all at the same time on the same computer. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I have no problem with Bernie Fisher Park. I don't really like C and D. I don't, because there is more than just CUNA days and the farmers market. I mean, you have the soccer camps, you have the Bible groups. I like B. I probably would be a little hesitant picking up the gazebo, moving it. If that is an option that we go, I probably would send out a little courtesy to the people that provided that gazebo to be built and make sure that they're on board with that. To throw something out there to you guys that I've thought of and mentioned is that, especially with item B, I can see, obviously, money was no object. I mean, to incorporate that water tower into the splash pad, to have water coming out of that thing, out of hoses or pipes or something, I think would just, I don't know, I think it would be cool. But, so, I mean, I will defer to your recommendation of Bernie Fisher Park, and if that's the case, if the others are agreeance to that, I would prefer probably the B option.
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
I assume the answer is no, because I wouldn't expect you necessarily to think of this, but did we get any feedback at all from the farmers market regarding like their interest in moving or ideas for where else they would go?
So I met with Quincy recently to go over some other things, and I did let her know that it's possible that this may be occurring. And so we had a long discussion about the city parking lot and them relocating to the city parking lot. I had addressed with the facilities director that, you know, they have certain needs as far as water and electricity and that type of thing. And so our goal would be, if we're relocating them over here to the city parking lot, that we make sure we work with any special events that are coming and work with their needs so that we can get them solidly established, and then help them that first year in the transfer as far as promoting that they've relocated here, because that's, you know, people get used to them being in a certain location. So they know that this may be coming, and they would be considered to use the city parking lot if that was okay with council.
Okay. Yeah, I guess, okay, I'll go ahead and throw out my opinion on the, I personally was most in favor of D, just because it seemed like it would require the least amount of, like, changing stuff. I'm scared about A, both for moving the gazebo. It just seems like it's in a good quiet spot. And then you mentioned, like, with the leaves falling, that just might be kind of nightmarish. And B, my real objection was just displacing the farmer's market. I feel like it's a feature that helps the walkability of downtown, that, like, whenever I go to the farmer's market, I then also usually, like, walk down to Zamzo's and maybe would walk down to the firehouse for breakfast or that sort of thing. But if we can kind of, it might be a double bonus in the sense that if we can get people going down to the other end of town, that maybe that also would help the walkability. So I would probably be fine with B or D seem like maybe the best options. I'm assuming it probably doesn't help at all that it's already concrete. I mean, we need to, like, take all of that out anyway to run everything, so.
Yeah, and something else to consider with location B is we could potentially still use that for the farmer's market. We just situate it to where maybe the little kid area was in that side. So vendors could still set up in that area. And then we wouldn't have the splash pad come on until after the farmer's market.
Okay.
So we could have that option as well.
But that could be fun.
I will add that the farmer's market prefers to stay there. But they would move there. They have a storage area in one of our sheds there and that kind of thing. So as you did indicate, they do feel secure there, and that's where people know they are. But that is their preference, but they will move if needed.
Bobby, do you have any plans to add any more shelter in that park?
Yes, I actually wanted to add two more this spring. North of the swing set really did take out six of those trees.
So that would be down there by spot B?
Yeah, that would be just to the right-hand side of spot B.
And then let's say that we do C or D. I think a question that has to be answered is, in an event like Huna Days or some other big event comes in, are we going to shut down the splash pad for that event?
I think that'd be up for debate. I could see how people would want to shut it down, but I could also see that can bring more people to Huna Days, and their kids could be playing in the splash pad while they're walking around, and it's usually pretty hot, so it'd be nice for everybody to cool down.
And the reason I asked, one of the reasons I asked, I mean, obviously D is some prime real estate, I guess, if you want to call it that. But, you know, I know one of the goals that we had at one point was to bring bigger events to our town, or any event, and to utilize that park. And that's why we spent $15,000 to put power in that park. So now I don't want to call it we're limiting, I guess, the use of that park. So therefore, that money may never be, I'm not going to say recouped, because that's maybe not my goal, but maybe that amenity will no longer be used as much as we thought it was, or maybe used to encourage people to come to CUNA, other promoters to bring their event to CUNA if the power there is no longer available. I will say, and I don't, I mean, obviously I'm not going to base my opinion on one thing, but, you know, D, I'll tell you right now, if D does it, then I know, like, CUNA Days is going to have to split up their vendors.
and all that. Not that that's an issue. There's always, I mean, I've expected that at some point someday anyway. So, and not even that, it's not even my problem anymore. So, but I just think that that's a lot of real estate to give up. That we're obviously creating a new feature, a very beneficial feature, a very good feature. But if we have another area that will not maybe create as much impact, and that's why I was kind of looking at B. I guess I wouldn't necessarily be open, not against C, but I just thought B down there would be a little more, and then with the water tower there, I mean, that's just my own personal opinion, but just something to consider with all that money we spent to upgrade that park that now we've limited ourselves a little bit.
Can I throw out one more thing and then I'll stop talking? Would it even be tenable and advisable to, for example, if the Grange allowed it, to run a line through the Grange property to the Greenbelt location so it wouldn't require tearing up the road? Or is that just, that's not really how we run the lines? That wouldn't really make sense.
I'm going to defer that to Gordon, but I'm going to make a comment that if we did that, then we'd have to get easement from them.
Yeah, I know that we've had some conversation, Gordon, about the fact that they've been without, like, irrigation for that property for a really long time, which is why it's just dead in the summer and stuff. So my suspicion, without having ever broached the subject with anybody, would be that they might be willing to offer that type of an easement if it meant that they also got their water back. If it could all be done in, like, one fell swoop, it might benefit everybody. So I'm just throwing it out there in case that kind of, because it's still pretty close to this location, and to the extent it maybe addresses some of the concerns. I didn't know if that was even worth thinking about. And now I'm, per my promise, I'm going to be quiet. Let me put it this way. Any and all water that would be required for the splash pad at a minimum. I'm just thinking because Bobby mentioned as like one of the big cons of having of going to the Greenbelt location was we would need to tear up the road in order to extend water down there, and it was going to be kind of a big undertaking. And I'm just wondering, it seems like maybe just cutting through the Grange property would be an option, but I don't know if that's realistic or not.
I think to get the potable water there, it's going to take cutting the new road.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, the potable water is not coming off of these blue lines.
I'm assuming what blue lines is water, green is irrigation, and the purple is sewer. But there's a blue line that runs over to.
I didn't prepare the map, so I'm not sure.
The blue lines are water, the green are sewer, and the purple are pressurized irrigation.
Oh, it looks like it's a 2-inch pipe, though. And you're going to need what, a minimum of what?
3-inch.
3-inch, okay.
Well, as I've looked at this, my preference was D. I like C or D, actually, because of the exposure that it gets, and yet it's not right close to the major road, and most of the lines are easy to get to there, plus the parking. And then I guess one thing I thought about, too, is a lot of times when they're having the baseball tournaments over there, that might be a good place for the little kids to get to go and double up the use there, but that was just kind of my preference, was location D.
B or D? You pick. Something's brewing. Say
it's up to you, Richard.
Well, I've kind of thought the green belt because it was close to the creek, you're going to be right next to the restrooms. You're going to be near parking there. It would free up the park for any other activity that might go on. The only thing you would have would be the potable water issue and maybe a net to keep baseballs from coming over and hitting the kids. But you would have that entire area for the families underneath the trees and the green area to enjoy themselves. I always thought the green belt was the better of all the locations other than the water issue. Unless there was a way you could run water there, or potable, or irrigation water, and have some way to sterilize it as it goes through the system. Because you've got potable water, irrigation water for the park over there, and you've got the pump down by the creek, don't we, that we activated?
It isn't activated. But
oh, it isn't?
But you do have the pressurized irrigation water right there.
So is there a way of sterilizing the water in-house there?
You're the one that's had the
data. There is. The only problem with that is there's a extremely high cost to do that every year.
That was the one we were looking at that was like $30,000 in maintenance per year or something like that, wasn't it? We'd looked at some filtered systems and using PI for.
I was going to say $30,000 sounds reasonable compared to a swimming pool, what the maintenance would be on it. This is a one-time deal we're going to put in. It would free up the entire park then. There wouldn't be any conflict with anything else going on up there. So I always thought the green belt would be more appropriate for the use. So
that $30,000 is a maintenance fee per year.
Yeah, okay. But that's still okay. Cheaper than swimming pool. You would probably have that per month. So I think $250 to $275 was the maintenance for a swimming pool. So $1,000.
How soon do you need to know on this, Bobby?
Sure. Now you're gonna. Everybody's gonna.
Well, I'm just wondering if we want to. Want some more time to think about this, or?
Yeah, you guys have more time to think about it. I'm just waiting for a decision.
We want it done by June. First.
Okay. Is there maybe? I don't know if I'm the only one thinking this way, but would there be any way you could give us some ideas of like cost estimates for making the Greenbelt location work? Like what Cardoza was saying in terms of doing some sort of filtration system, or like what really would it take to run the water and stuff? Because I mean, I'm definitely torn. I like Joe, I like location D a lot, but like Pat said, I mean, we are trying to do more events and stuff and have that as another option for people to go enjoy things in CUNA. And so finding some sort of happy medium, I think, might be worth a little bit of extra money. So I'd be willing to consider like maybe a slightly higher operating cost if it meant having some of that additional flexibility. Would that be mm-hmm. like way too much to ask?
Mm-hmm. No, okay. I can get all that together and have it by next council meeting.
I guess like some super rough, like don't spend a ton of time on it, but operating numbers for Bernie Fisher too would help us get a better idea of like what's the cost benefit of, you know, if it only costs 25% to operate it in Bernie Fisher of what it would cost to operate it on the Greenbelt, like is that additional, I think it'll help us better rationalize, like is that additional 75% expenditure worth greater flexibility with Bernie Fisher and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So to kind of respond to that a little bit, the system I originally wanted to go with was a repurposed system. So we'd use potable water to go through the splash pad, and then we put it in a storage tank and then pump it in the grass,
okay.
Which is probably about 25 to 30% less than treating it every time, and then figuring out how to get rid of it after that, which we probably still have to do the repurpose. So you're still going to have that cost on top of treating it. So.
Okay. But that's regardless of location?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, and I guess just be as creative as possible with regard to, like, any ideas you have for ways to make the Greenbelt one work.
Okay.
And go from there.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate all this already, though. This is really helpful.
Who owns the road behind, in between the Grange and the, or that dirt gravel road in between the Grange and the ball field?
The city does.
Can you look at the map that had the Bernie Fisher Park, the one, I guess, probably the one that says cons on it? It looks like it's 6 of 12.
Okay.
At the very bottom, it looks like there's already a 10-inch line that runs along 2nd Avenue.
Oh, yes, yes.
So we could tap into that, run it down that gravel road to it, and then you wouldn't have to tear up any highways or any roads. So that would be a significant savings. Do you know what that line is on that corner that comes out of the pressurized irrigation where it says S, and it looks like there's a green line going across over there, too?
That also looks like 10-inch.
But is that a pressurized irrigation line?
No, that's a potable water line. So all the blue ones are potable water, and all the green ones are sewer.
But coming off that S on that corner there, there's a green line that's about, on my screen, inch and a half long scale-wise, but it goes diagonal to almost sort of the corner of the Grange parking lot is, that comes off of it. What is that line? Because that looks green to me, not.
That I don't know.
Well, I just.
It could be from the Grange going into the sewer system.
But green is pressurized irrigation.
Green is sewer.
Green is sewer. Okay. Purple is pressurized. Okay. There you go. That okay. Now I've got, now that makes more sense. But we could run that off that 10-inch line and just run straight down. And then do you have any plans ever bringing irrigation over there where the horseshoe bits are and all that stuff?
Irrigation as far as?
Pressure to, so you can put any grass over there? Or?
I do from the sprinklers. I just got to remodel it a little bit because that's on its own separate system.
Okay. Yeah, if you can look into that, run it off that tent so we don't have to tear up roads. I mean, that would be, because if we don't have to do it that way, then I would definitely, I mean, I don't have a problem with the green belt. I would be for that too, so.
Yeah, I'll get numbers together.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. Thank you.
Pat wants you to look at moving the water tower, too.
When you suggested that, Pat, the lawyer in me just was screaming, like, liability, they're going to climb on it. Well, it's wet.
They'll climb on that building over there, too.
Okay. Consideration to approve resolution number R19-2017 supporting the CUNA School District's bond and supplemental levy election. I think we have someone here to present for the CUNA School District. We're friends of CUNA School District.
Mayor, Councilman, I'm Jenny Greger.
And I'm Amber Abercrombie.
And we're the co-chairs for the bond and levy election coming up on March 14th. And what we're here to do is to ask you, based on the resolution, do you want me to read that?
I can read the resolution,
Anyway, we're here to ask for your support for the bond election. I think it would be a positive to our, to the success of our bond issue.
It was basically many months were spent coming up with the proposal that we presented to the school board, and it was basically very well received unanimously among the school board. And we feel that it would not only be extremely beneficial for the school district, but for our community as a whole. So if you guys have any questions for us about the bond itself,
okay. One thing I was curious about was, I think when we ran the bond for the, we ran the vote for the recreation district, it seems like the discussion on that dropped off a couple of weeks before the actual vote, and we felt that that was very detrimental to that issue. So I'm just wondering, have you got some more stuff coming up just to keep that out there and on everybody's minds so that we don't forget about it?
Right, absolutely. We have a committee in place, and we are doing a number of things. We are making sure that we have a table set up at least one event at every single one of our schools, and so we can hit, you know, all of our zones and that sort of thing. And at, like, the high school and a couple of the other schools, for instance, we'll be there multiple times with the tables. We'll also be there at basketball games and that sort of thing on the weekends. We have a phone bank set up, which will go through the 14th. So we're there 4 days a week from about 5:30 to 8:30 making phone calls. We will also be sending out a postcard closer to the election. So we're trying to educate as much as we possibly can and do it in a financially conservative way.
Good, good, thank you. Question?
I don't think so. I mean, I've heard a lot about it online. I'm impressed with the fact that you're accomplishing so much without taxes going up. I think that's remarkable and should be commended. And it sounded to me like one of the biggest misconceptions that people weren't aware of was, I guess, why you guys can't budget better and pay for the schools that way. Do you want to talk on that a little bit?
We actually can't, and I mean, Wendy could touch on that a little bit more, but the district is not allowed to use operational funds to go out and build buildings. They basically, their only option is donation. If somebody wanted to give us $100 million, we wouldn't mind, but otherwise they have to bond. And the district has been, I'm a parent in the district. I have two daughters that attend. We've lived here for about 13 years. And I only know of one bond since the time that we have lived here, that the school district has come for the patrons. But with the rapid rate of growth, which we were just seeing a little piece of, and also kind of one of the things that you were touching on a little bit as far as the subdivisions and the fees and that sort of thing and paying for schools. That is one of the things the schools don't have the opportunity to ask for impact fees, educational impact fees. That is one of the things that we get over and over and over in the community. There's frustration there that we can't go to the developers and say, hey, you have to give us $50 million. You're giving us 1,000 students, you know, that are coming to our schools, but it's actually against the law in Idaho. So we wish that were not the case, but given that it is, the only opportunity we have to build schools is to bond. So I think that we've been really respectful to the patrons, and the school district has done an amazing job positioning it so that there is not a tax increase. So basically you get $42.5 million worth of buildings and improvements without the rate going up at all, which is pretty phenomenal, I think.
And just to reiterate on that question, too, about why doesn't the school district have enough money just to build these on their own. I spent 14 years on the board, so I've seen the budget. I know what it's like. The state doesn't give you enough money to fund education, let alone build a building. So that's really school district's only source of revenue for buildings is bonding. So, and growth also, I mean, helps to pay for the bond. It also causes a reason for the bond, but it does also help pay as we get more students here. Granted, we need more buildings, but then there is somebody to help pay. And of course, as you well know, the more commercial we get, the better off the school district is. That's positive, great, huge positive to see those commercial buildings going in on the radio.
Awesome. And real quick, can you just tell us, if you happen to know off the top of your head, what percentage of school districts in the state of Idaho have asked for supplemental levies or, like, currently have supplemental levies on the books? Do you happen to know, like, rough off the top of your head?
It used to be like 93%.
90-something percent.
So CUNA's not alone.
And we're actually, the school board has, I don't know if they voted or if they've just, the 5%, was that like a vote that they, yes, okay. So I didn't want to misspeak, but the school board has voted to maintain basically $5 for every thousand. And that would keep us, it was 2 years ago, 6.17, really close. And one of the things that we have seen in our community is we have seen that rate go up and down and up and down. And it's been really difficult. I mean, as a homeowner, you have no idea what to anticipate. And so by basically kind of having to keep it at that 5%, which it would still be even after, if the bond passes, it would still be at that 5%, and that would allow us to give our patrons basically, this is what it's going to look like. You know, in 5 years, it's still going to be at this rate. So you can budget, and you know, and it'll still give us the opportunity to address the growth that we see in the next 3, 5, and 10 years, which is pretty phenomenal. It's kind of crazy. Awesome, also. But that is another thing that we've heard a lot. Just as we've gone out and promoted it and that sort of thing, people saying, you know, taxes will go up and then they drop down and I don't know what to expect. So this is a great way to address the growth and also, you know, what to expect.
And I sat on the committee where we had a great deal of discussion from a very diverse group of people, so that we have a lot of different insight as to, you know, the way things ought to look and how they ought to go. And we had some realtors there, and we had some farmers there, and some school teachers. And yeah, I mean, it was just a really good exercise to go through. I think we spent about 4 months on that. And came up with a pretty good plan, I think. And from day one, the school board's direction was we will not raise taxes. So they kept us within those bounds, and I think we came up with a really good plan to make this work. So
definitely.
I'm really happy with it myself. Okay.
Yeah. I just want to commend you all. Those of you who don't know me, I'm pretty conservative, and I try to question every dollar that's spent. I've had several conversations with Adam, too, over this, so to make sure I get everything straight. But I think the school district is being very proactive, and I really appreciate that. I try to be myself proactive, and I think proactive solves a lot of problems. I mean, you guys pretty much have almost laid out a 20-year plan. And, you know, I know there's some other bonds in there, but I think you've shown that that 5% will stay. I think even the notion that when the emergency levy came up that you didn't take all the money that you could have just shows that you care about the money along with the kids. So I think on that point, I have been very happy with what the school district has done. I think you've answered a lot of questions. I don't know what your plans are to get to the people that maybe not be affiliated with school. Like myself, I don't have any children in school, so I don't go to the games. I don't go to the school, so that might be something just to think about. Obviously, the postcards and stuff will do that, but all in all, I don't. I mean, I commend you deeply for the effort you put in and the goal to keep that 5% where it's at, even with the other bonds to finish out the high school and everything. I mean, it's just, and to have that plan, it may not be exactly that after 20 years, but just to, that answers questions for me. I know what's coming down the road, and I appreciate that because I can get more support by doing that because I know that you've thought about that and just not trying to react. And I mean, obviously, there is a little reaction there, but it's it is, I mean, it has to be done, but to have that proactiveness throughout the whole thing is just, from my standpoint, wonderful. So I appreciate all your time and effort, and you can thank Adam, too, for his patience with me. So, but you guys have been very transparent. He's answered every question. I don't think he's ever tried to tell me what I want to hear. So, and I know he's open to anybody who can ever talk to him. So in that respect, I think that's great. So I do appreciate that very much. So thank you.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
This is resolution number R19-2017, resolution of the City Council of the City of Kuna, Idaho, recognizing the importance of a high-quality public education system to the livability of a community and the well-being of its children, and the subsequent benefits to our families and our citizens, supporting the Kuna School District's bond and supplemental levy action on Tuesday, March 14, 2017. Whereas America's public schools are the cornerstones of our democracy, providing our nation's children with the education needed to be productive members of society, and whereas public schools are a critical component of our national and local economies, developing our children's ability to be lifelong learners and contributing responsible citizens through preparing young people for a wide range of careers, in order to provide the well-educated workforce essential to family prosperity, business advancement, and national economic success in the global marketplace, and whereas every local public school plays a key role in the vitality of its neighborhood and community and represents an important civic investment for learning for a wide range of public activities, from voting to meeting of clubs and community organizations, as well as recreation and enrichment opportunities, all of which contribute to the livability of our community. And whereas the Kuna School District is preparing for unprecedented growth in our community, with the prediction of 700 new students enrolling in our schools within the next 3 years, and whereas due to a lack of state funding for facilities, safety equipment, and personnel, curriculum materials and technological resources to support all children, the Kuna School District, we use the $40 million bond to build phase one of a second high school, complete the critical repairs in existing facilities, convert Teed to a middle school, add four classrooms to both Reed Elementary and Silver Trail Elementary, and add a multi-purpose athletic room to the Kuna High School, and use $2.5 million to purchase curriculum materials, technology, safety equipment, and safety personnel. And whereas in the spirit of productive collaboration to best benefit the taxpayers, serve the City of Kuna and the school district have agreed to continue to work closely on all issues of importance to the citizens that we mutually represent and serve. And whereas the Kuna School District continues to implement transparent, prudent, frugal financial practices, demonstrating its strong commitment to the stewardship of finite resources for the instruction and benefit of its students. And whereas the ballot language of the bond proposed to the Kuna School District addresses the most crucial educational needs for the next 2 years to create a positive legacy for our future while not raising the tax rate. And whereas in order for the City of Kuna to be in the most livable cities in the country, it is imperative that the Kuna School District have the resources to continue to provide education to our citizens at the highest level, and that our school buildings serve as an important centers for the educational, social, and cultural needs of their neighborhoods. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Mayor and Council of the City of Kuna that the Mayor and City Council support the $40 million and the $2.5 million supplemental levy proposed by the school district, that the Mayor and City Council urge the voters of the Kuna School District to vote affirmatively when the bond and supplemental levy proposal are placed before them in the election of March 14, 2017, that this resolution shall be in full force and effect immediately upon its adoption and approval. So I would...
I move we approve resolution number R19-2017 that you just read.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R19-2017. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Item 7C, consideration to approve resolution number R20-2017, approving the selection of Agnew Beck Consulting for the preparation of a new City of CUNA, Idaho comprehensive plan. Wendy Howell.
We had three proposals for consultation. We interviewed all three on February 13th, and Brianna was on the selection committee as well as the mayor, and Agnew and Beck was the best choice, I think, with them being local and the availability of their services to CUNA.
I'll just mention the decision was unanimous, so everybody, including ACHD and Ada County, both sent reps who also agreed, and two of the biggest points, I think, Wendy already mentioned the fact that they're local was definitely, we thought, would be helpful, and then secondly, just the fact that they were already well acquainted with CUNA. They are already familiar with the Downtown Revitalization Plan, having been involved with that. But it became apparent with some of the other presentations that there was going to be potentially a significant period of education to get the other firms up to speed on what CUNA was all about and what, you know, what our future was going to be and that sort of thing. And so it seemed like a lot of time and money was going to go into that sort of thing. But overall, I think everybody was just incredibly impressed. Like I said, the decision was unanimous, and I know I came away from the day feeling very excited and hopeful about what we can come up with Agnew Beck. So if anybody has questions, Joe or I can, I'm sure, or Wendy can answer them.
Okay, questions? I would agree. I think there was actually one clear choice out of the three presentations that we heard. I think they're going to do us an outstanding job on this. And we actually, Wendy and her staff and I got together before, a couple days before that meeting, and we kind of drafted a list of questions that we thought were quite pertinent. And those questions were all answered very well by that group, and I'm very confident with their that they will perform for us and do a good job. So, any further questions?
I move we approve resolution number R20-2017.
Second.
Motion to amend seconded to approve resolution number R20-2017. Approving the selection of Agnew Beck Consulting for the preparation of the new City of CUNA, Idaho Comprehensive Plan. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Item 7D is actually on your printed copy as 8D. This is for... request from Mayor Steer to confirm appointment of Antonio Conti, P.E., to the position of CUNA City Engineer. There were actually two applicants that were quite qualified. The Paul that we had talked to in the beginning, we ended up going through a long negotiation with him, and I guess I don't know how else to explain it, but in the end, I think he had a job that he didn't want to leave anyway. So that fell through. Actually, this morning we had an engineer hired, and by 2 o'clock this afternoon, we didn't anymore. So Richard actually called and talked to Antonio, and he was... was excited about the position and was willing to step up and take that. And I kind of polled staff, and I think with the exception of I never did get a chance to talk to John today, but everyone was in support of Antonio. I guess probably Gordon would be the best one to answer any questions if you have anything. Considering I've always put a lot of weight into what Gordon said, obviously, because this is his position that's being taken over. But anyway, that's kind of where we're at. So we believe that when we make a phone call, we can get this finalized to get Antonio on board and get this process going finally. So anyway, that's where we're at here.
I move we approve the appointment of Antonio Conti to the position of city engineer.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to confirm the appointment of Antonio Conti, PE, to the position of CUNA city engineer. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Ordinances, 8A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2017-02, annexing TNT's certain real property into the city of CUNA, Idaho. This is an ordinance annexing certain real property to wit parcel number S131443-8290, situated in the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the city of CUNA, into the city of CUNA, Idaho, establishing the zoning classification of said real property, directing that copies of this ordinance be filed as provided by law, and providing an effective date. So unless anyone has any real questions on this, this is seems to be a fairly straightforward thing, and would be no reason not to fast-track this unless you see otherwise.
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-02.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance number 2017-02. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2017-02.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve Ordinance number 2017-02. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza? Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin-Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2017-02.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of Ordinance 2017-02. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. It will become law upon publication. Item B, consideration to approve Ordinance number 2017-03, amending CUNA City Code, Chapter 8, Title 3, Special Events. An ordinance of the City of CUNA, Idaho, amending certain sections of Chapter 8, Title 3, entitled Special Events of the CUNA City Code, Special Events, and providing an effective date. This one, with the number of people that are starting to flow in on special events, and that actually would be preferred if we could waive the three readings and run this one through. Yes, go ahead.
I don't know if anybody had any questions. Richard, will you look at special event permit required under 38-2A5? Weren't we going to add unless weapons are sold? It still says or. Didn't we? I thought we had a correction on that.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was just curious about, I know we didn't talk about it, and regarding notification of when a special event is happening,
I the only thing I was thinking just to it would be nice to have those notifications that an event is happening, maybe going out to council or something, that somehow notify everybody, and maybe even just a courtesy copy of the permit would solve that, just so we are aware of events that are happening. Because I wasn't even aware there was 28 events last year. I don't know how many there was, but just in case we get questions, at least we know that. So I don't know if that's something we need to put in there, or I don't know how to handle that.
Council Member Jones, I'm not sure we would put it in the ordinance, but we can certainly have either a resolution or just a direction to the city clerk's office to email out council when those come in.
Okay. And that would be fine with me. Anybody else have questions?
No.
Then, Mayor, I move that we need to waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-03.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance Number 2017-03. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Mayor, I move that we approve Ordinance Number 2017-03 with the correction under 3-8-2A5 to add the word unless, and to add direction that courtesy notification copies will be provided to council.
Point of clarification. I thought the comment from over here was we don't need to include that part in the resolution. We can just plan to do it.
This is an ordinance, so we'll either do it by resolution or just a direction to the city clerk's office.
Oh, so you just bring that back later then?
Yes.
Okay, then that's fine. Then I strike that comment or that addition to the motion. So just to approve Ordinance 2017-03 with just the correction under 382A5.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2017-03 with the aforementioned change. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardozo? Yes. Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor, I move that we approve the summary publication of 2017-03.
Second. Motion is made and seconded to approve the summary publication of Ordinance Number 2017-03. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. The ordinance will become law upon publication. C, consideration to approve Ordinance Number 2017-04, amending CUNA City Code 4-2-1, Building Codes, an ordinance of the City Council for the City of CUNA, Idaho, amending CUNA City Code 4-1-2 to clarify the subsection regarding violation, notice, remedy, and additional costs, establishing that civil fines shall be assessed for the violations of the adopted building codes, and setting forth a graduated civil fine penalty for said violations, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing an effective date. Bob, do you want to go ahead and just kind of give a quick summary of how this came about? And I think this is another one where it actually is a little less restrictive, so there's probably no reason to do with all three readings.
Mayor and Council, just real quickly here, basically what we've been encountering, the busier we get, people are proceeding without inspections. We're getting a lot of new contractors into the area that may not be used to how we operate, and we just basically have no teeth right now to do anything about it other than to stop the entire project, which is generally not a good way to go about it. So this will give us some sort of penalty if they proceed without an inspection, or if they proceed after we told them not to proceed, just in something to enforce that will get their attention.
And you think the dollar amounts are sufficient to get their attention? Like they wouldn't just be like, well, it's worth $50 to just keep going?
I think it is, because generally the general contractors will require the sub that did it to pay that fee, and that's generally the guy that it hits the hardest.
Perfect. Thank you.
Bob, I had a couple of questions for you regarding this. Is this any, I mean, none of these requirements are any different than any other city, is it, as far as getting your inspections?
No, it's standard.
Okay, so they should be, I mean, granted, if this is their first dealing with the city, they should be versed on what their requirements are when they come in to get their permit, that they have to follow the rules. And
yes, Councilman Jones, it's very well spelled out.
Then I'm curious of why our current code does not suffice to enforce this. Where's the hang-up that...
I think more than anything, it's just to clear up the language that the current code said that if we red tag it mm-hmm. and then you proceed, then we can put a penalty in place. But this is clears that up to where even if you proceed without a red tag or an inspection, then it allows us to penalize you. So it just cleans that up a little bit.
So what you're saying is if you come in, instead of the penalty before would have been you would have had to came in, noticed it, then you could penalize. Now is if you come in and noticed that they've already gone beyond it, you can penalize them at that point too.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have, if you feel that this is going to be easier to enforce it than what's already on there, I don't have a problem with that. I think the dollar amounts are too low. I think we should not be even worried for anybody who's violating our law. So I would rather see either go back to the $150 a day that was in the original code, or my preference even go higher, but I just don't know why we're necessarily, and I'm not saying you are, I'm not saying that's why these numbers come up, but I'm not concerned about the dollar amounts based on penalizing somebody who should know the law and is violating the law. I mean, it's one thing if you don't know it, but if they know it, then I don't have a problem just keeping it $150 a day, which is what it currently is. So I don't know how the other council members or what you think, or if you have anything different or...
My opinion is once they figure out that this is now what we're allowed to do, I don't think we'll have a problem anymore. It's just recently that it's become a problem. Last 11 years I've been doing this, it hasn't been a huge problem until probably the last 6 months. And like I said, I think most of that is we're getting new people to CUNA. The subs that are normally used are all booked out, so there's a lot of new contractors coming in. And it's kind of almost a matter of just training them the way we do things. I think the fines, they're obviously low, but I think it'll definitely get their attention. Like I told Councilman Brianna, that it's generally the laborer that's going to end up paying that. So I do think it'll get their attention.
And I appreciate that. I mean, I don't see why. I mean, I would like to keep it at 150, I guess, and just have it straight, $150 a day. And I'm assuming we've removed the misdemeanor clause too, I guess, right? Or is that still in there?
That's still in there. The $150 is a civil penalty.
Yeah.
The misdemeanor falls back to the city code, the general city code violation. And so if they don't pay the fine, then it can be a misdemeanor.
And that's where we're not going to do, because I know that I guess I read somewhere that I believe it's Idaho code that prevents us from giving them a misdemeanor and then charging them a fine.
A civil penalty.
Civil penalty, yeah. After we've.
Yeah, our preference would be to go with the civil penalty. Obviously. The financial interest to the city of that versus sending it to the court, having it shuffle through, and maybe the court only imposing court costs and no fine, which means nothing coming back to the city. So we don't intend to do anything with the misdemeanors, really.
Okay. I mean, one of the things that I've stressed, I mean, obviously I sit up here and complain about our codes, but is – to make sure, I mean, assuming we're educating first. So I mean, obviously you're not going to go in there every time and you're just not going to, you know, write a ticket, I guess you want to call it. So if we're giving them the opportunity to fix their problem, then I think that I still think that I would prefer to have the higher dollar amount. But if we're not gonna just come in there and slap it on them. I mean, I just want to make sure that our concern isn't making sure that it's costing them too much. And I know you're somewhat, obviously the subs may not be the ones making that call, but again, the subs know that their laborers know that they're violating the code, which they should, and they continue even though their boss tells them, then I think there's a little more of a problem there that's not the city's responsibility. Like I said, I'd rather just keep the 150, and I'd even vote for 250 if you ask me. But
that would actually require publication and would extend the process to where we can't get this through in a timely manner, and they kind of need it now.
Have we already publicized this?
Council member Jones, we don't have to because it's currently at $150. So if we keep it at $150 or less than a 10% increase, then we don't have to.
Yeah,
if you want to go to $250, then we would have to. My suggestion would be if you want to go with $150 per day, we leave that and see how it works. And then if we decide that it's not working, then we can increase the fee.
And I'd be for that if the other council members are all right with leaving it at the 150.
Can I just say one thing to that? I'm fine if that's what you guys want to do, but we did also call the other cities to see what they were doing, and we kind of followed the guideline throughout the Treasure Valley of the, at least of the people that called us back. So that's kind of where we came up with the numbers, just so you have that piece of information. And also, just so you, to clarify, when we go in and do an inspection, if we were to walk in and we always give them one warning first, hey, you need to stop where you're at, don't continue, or there will be a penalty. So it's not, we just don't come in and stop the work. We do always give a notice the first time.
Yeah, and I thought you did. I mean, I wasn't saying that you weren't doing that. I just, if we're already doing that and they've already had their verbal warning, why are we concerned what we're finding them? And that's where I was kind of coming from. So
I guess my read on it is because Bob's primarily the one who's going to have to deal with this, if he thinks what he's proposing will take care of it, I'm fine with going with it. Also because I think, to me, the point of these fines is not to punish somebody, but rather to encourage compliance, so to correct behavior rather than to slap somebody on the wrist. So I'm not saying I wouldn't be in favor. Like, I would totally be open to revisiting this and upping the dollar amounts if it turns out that this isn't inappropriate, if it doesn't take care of the problem. But if Bob thinks it's going to take care of the problem and that it would be sufficient deterrent, I'm fine with just trying this at least, and then we can always increase later.
Let me ask you one thing. What do you think that time-wise you're invested in this? I mean, to have to go get a letter, I guess, because are you carrying the letters with you, or how do you give them the official warning and then having to go back? I mean, how much time are you have involved above and beyond what you normally would?
So we do carry the letter with us. We just would write a red tag telling them to stop work after the verbal. So we do have that paperwork with us. Generally what happens is you're inspecting at a house next door and you know where that other inspection process is, mm-hmm. and you see that they're proceeding without an inspection. So you're generally, you wouldn't just be roaming around and run into it. You're generally at the house next door across the street. So you're in the area anyway. That's how we catch them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there would be multiple cases where a house could have skipped 2, 3, 4 trades before we noticed it. So to answer your question, it's not a whole lot of time because we're generally in the area.
Okay. So, I mean, I was just more, if it was taking hours, I mean, obviously that's worth a little more. But if it's not really too much out of your way, then I don't have a problem going with what you have. I mean, I will compromise, I guess.
One of the other reasons, right now we have a reinspection fee, which is $50. So if the general contractor fails the same inspection more than 3 times, we charge them $50. And then if it's the 4th time, then it doubles, which we never get to the double point. But that $50 reinspection fee works really well, and it really does get their attention. And generally, you don't have the same problems over and over again. So I am pretty confident that it'll help.
And then do we give them something at the time they come to get their permit so they're aware of the code?
On the building permit, it establishes a code, okay. Says which code sections we're using, and so on and so forth.
So they can't say they've never been told, is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was curious. Okay, thank you.
Ignorance of the law isn't a defense anyway.
Okay, anything further? Thank you, Bob.
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-04.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2017-04. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2017-04.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2017-04. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza? Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin-Wanderar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2017-04.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance Number 2017-04. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Upon publication, Ordinance Number 2017-04 will become law. We are down to discussion items. Discussion of special events partnerships with the city and sponsorships of city events. Pat, I think you wanted to.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to have a little discussion with the other council members, especially since we've now approved a new special event ordinance. Last year, I believe the city was approached for a partnership to put on an event. That event was Trunk or Treat. And during that event, the city provided some amenities, covered some costs for them. That was no out-of-pocket cost for the city. And that event was a free event to the public. There was no vendors. There was no charge for the public to be there, and there were no items being sold. I just want to see if we feel there's any need to set guidelines of when we can partner with a promoter and when we can't. And I'm just more using that as so people are aware of what can they can expect or what we would require. I don't know if how often it would happen, but I mean, obviously an event, you know, that has vendors and has people buying things. I don't think that the city should be providing a partnership that lessens the burden of insurance and stuff like that. So, I'm not saying any of that is happening. Please don't get me wrong there. But I'd rather put things in place to prevent that from happening or prevent somebody from coming in and questioning why the city partnered with them. They didn't have to do this. Now you're requiring me to do this. So I was just looking for some basic guidelines of when the city would partner with somebody and when we wouldn't. So I just said that.
So actually what happened on that one, we didn't partner with them. They found that there was possibly a problem with using the parking lot. Albertson's was under construction, so they couldn't really set foot in there. We have this parking lot available. I actually am the one that authorized their use of the parking lot, and then Chris kind of went through and helped organize that together. Normally, I don't do things like that, but they were kind of in a bind on this one, so we offered to step in and offer a place to give them that. But that's not something we would normally do. I think most normally everything falls under a special event plan, and, unless it's actually a city function on its own. Maybe Chris can speak to that a little further.
Mayor's accurate. We were approached by the chamber, by Marianne, was panicked a little bit, but we did do a special event plan on it. The questionnaire was done, the application was filled out, and then we did do a special event plan on it. City was in attendance, as we are in other ones, with a trunk with candy in it. And we had some electricity we let them use as well. We didn't partner as much as we just tried to help them in the situation, but we still followed the protocols of the special event plan. Other than the city's eye crimp is the one that covered the liability on
So that event did not have to have the required insurance.
The chamber had the insurance, and we had ICRIM.
That's not accurate, but chamber did not have insurance. I don't know. I mean, I'm aware of the other side of the story. I know there's two sides to it. But if you're stating now that that's not going to be a norm and that's not going to happen this year and that's not something we're going to do, then I don't have any other further questions. I just, if we were going to get into the reoccurrence of those type of things happening, that somebody can come to the city and being a free event to anybody, and because I don't think it was a bad thing to city partner. I think it was great. I mean, I think the city got just as much recognition from the chamber, probably if not more. I have nothing against it. I just want to make sure that if we are allowing that to happen in the future, there's some guidelines. But if I'm being told that was a one-time only thing, I have no further questions.
That was kind of at my discretion to go ahead and authorize them to use the parking lot, because I felt that it was a good thing that they do every year, and they kind of got themselves in a bind, and so I didn't see any reason not to help them out. I think they followed most everything in the special event plan except probably the number of days in which you have to have all your plan in and that type of thing, but that was simply helping the chamber out. Now, as far as there being another side to a story to this, I don't know what that is. I guess I would certainly be interested if I was led to believe something that was not true, if that's what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying that nothing is true. I agree with everything you've said beyond that, but I know that the insurance requirement was a concern with the chamber, and I know the chamber was deeply grateful that that insurance requirement was met by the city. And I think that, you know, I know there was some discussion that the chamber was to facilitate the event, do all the advertising for the event, and that the city was going to get recognition as being a partner. And I have no issues whatsoever about your decision or anything like that. I just, if it was going to become a something that the city was going to offer in the future to help get these non-revenue generating events to come to the city, I don't have a problem with it. I just wanted to know if we would be setting guidelines. But for what I'm being told here tonight, that's not the direction the city wants to go, and that it's nothing to be, then I have no concerns.
Councilmember Jones. I have a copy. Actually, I have it here this evening because of, you know, you'd emailed previously. And in it, I can show you or give you a copy of the special event plan where it does call out that the city will carry the ICRIM.
Oh, I'm not disputing that. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is if you offered it to them and gave that to them, why can't I come in here and say that I want to put an event in this parking lot?
Sure.
I will partner with you. I'll give you second billing on everything. I will create no vendors, no vendor fees, nothing like that. I will make no money. Are you going to allow me to do that?
So, as indicated before, it was kind of a, you know, trunk or treat wasn't going to occur.
Oh, I know.
Because of parking lot. And so they made the request. We took the request forward to the mayor and, you know, did our best to accommodate an annual event that comes up. Typically, we don't partner with anybody. Typically, if we have events and funding is needed, we work through a sponsorship program with, you know, there's things that are signed, there's letters that are sent out, there's, you know, obligations on both parts and that type of thing. So we don't partner. For example, if a special event was to come to the park, Punk in the Park, they didn't really have money for insurance. However, we required that they do it anyway. And we didn't partner with them, and we didn't offer them any coverage. It was just one of those situations, and we all jumped in and did what we could to make sure that we continued to do an event. Had they been a for-profit business, it would have been different, but they are a civic organization in the city. That was the difference. That was the only reason that it was even considered.
And again, I mean, I'm not against anything the city did on that. That's not my concern tonight. My concern was if we were going to do that in the future, that there just be guidelines. But if we're not going to do that, and
I think everybody, including the chamber, myself, the people that participate in Trunk or Treat are grateful with the city. I mean, the city saved that event. I don't, I'm not disputing that, and that's not my concern. My concern was just to make sure that if we were going to do those type of things in the future, that we just create some guidelines that, you know, people can't be generating money and get that type of thing. I mean, I don't have a problem doing it.
I think council's been pretty direct with that as far as any kind of fee waivers and what the criteria is for that, such as at the park. There's no fee waivers unless it's a youth organization with no vendors, no profits being made, it's nonprofit. I mean, council has set the criteria of when the city will do a fee waiver, which gives us the general direction of council as far as, you know, youth-oriented, no profit, no vendors, you know, nothing like that. So we adhere to the direction council's provided. I think it was, I don't know, 12 to 18 months ago, something like that. So.
No, well, I appreciate it. I know, I mean, my concerns are resolved. I mean, it's been answered that we're not doing it, so.
Okay.
The other thing I had on there, just the sponsorships, maybe my question would go to Richard as far as not necessarily legality but protection for the city. I know we've had some generous donations in the past that have requirements attached to them. How do we protect the city if somebody doesn't fulfill those requirements? I'm not looking to do a contract for anything. I was maybe suggesting that anything over, you know, maybe $1,000 or something has to have some sort of written contract so both sides are binding. I don't know if that's something council is receptive to, but I just want to make sure that we are protected from our point of view, that if somebody, if we're going to give them that type of a sponsorship, and sometimes it may not happen. I mean, I don't know if somebody doesn't pay on time or what, then how do we protect ourselves if we've already spent money on advertising and all that stuff? So,
Chris, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. So, last year we did have some issues with one of the sponsorships, and then we had to backtrack on that. However, from that incident and any future sponsorships, everything that we've done up until now, we have now have a deadline. We've learned from that experience, and we have a deadline when all payment has to be in, and we don't put out any promotional materials, and we don't promote anybody as a sponsor unless they've paid their sponsorship. We send out an invoice. I get that from the treasurer's office. It goes out to them. They pay it. Then it gets, you know, noted and credited over, that we can move forward with them as a sponsor. That is how that now works.
Okay, so going forward, we will require all money be paid before any.
Absolutely. Okay.
And I'm happy with that. That's all my concerns. Thank you.
Okay, then, so one thing that I was going to bring up is our police chief, Justin Dussault, is looking to promote and further his career, so he will be being replaced as our chief. I don't know exactly the timeline on that. I'll be meeting with his recommendation for replacement here this week, actually, and we'll start beginning those discussions. So mostly just want to bring that up just so that you know, and Chief Dussault has done us a wonderful job, so we're going to miss him. He's going to be tough to replace, but he has assured me that his replacement is every bit as capable as he was, and we'll be every bit as happy with him as we were with him. So I guess we can yell at him if that doesn't work out. But Chief Dussault is also going to be working with whoever takes his place for a while before he just takes off out the door. So anyway, I just wanted you to know that, so that they've been talking about it here for a little bit, but I didn't ever know if it was official, but now it's looking like it's going to be. So anyway, that was just kind of FYI. So is there anything else anyone has would like to discuss?
No.
No, sir.
Okay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.